It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. One of the big challenges that I think a lot of organizations continue to face and will continue to face is the scourge of employee burnout. We have all experienced to some extent one way or another. And I think the question is not so much what is it, but what to do about it. And so today on Great Mondays Radio, I have Bhavik R. Shah, who is a director of people and culture at Rewild, a wildlife conservation organization focusing on people engagement, equitable hiring, psychological safety. He is also, if that's not enough, he is also a culture change strategist and keynote speaker focusing on, you guessed it, mental health and burnout. Bhavik, thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
What a wonderful intro. I feel like I need to record that and then play that for myself every morning as my daily affirmations.
Luckily.
Gosh, it's so nice to be here. Thank you so much for that kind introduction. And hello to all your lovely listeners.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I'm really excited to have you on. You have a lot of expertise in helping organizations do better, and you know, I myself I'm also, you know, deeply involved in culture change. Why is it the specificity of mental health and burnout that you are hyper focused on? What is going on? What is going on there? What kind of brought you to this specific expertise?
It's a great question. So my background and like what I studied in university and spent 12 years of my career was actually in financial services and investment banking and management consulting. And as you can imagine, and you guessed it right, I burnt out quite a bit in that field.
No
three
surprise.
times.
Yeah.
Not a surprise.
Three times. You burnt out three times.
Three times in
different
regions. And I basically had a breaking point. I remember exactly where I was. I remember the date. I remember the time. And I had a full-on panic attack. I haven't had one since. And I realized like something needs to change. And what I realized through conversations, through introspection, through therapy, through, you know, leadership, you know, conversations is that yes, mental health awareness is important. Burnout is important to talk about. But also, we need to hold ourselves accountable for the systems that we create at work. What's happening a lot, and it still is that, you know, the pressure of work is not going away. Like, we are in one of the most rampant, high-paced work cultures in our histories, and we're now just expecting people to get on board. And because of that, because of these expectations that the company is setting, both known and unknown, like these spoken about expectations, and then individualized conversations that we have with ourselves about how do we show up at work? What does burnout look for us? Or, you know, what does burnout look like for us? All that amalgamates to the highest point in our workforce where we're just not doing well. And the point of now, this is like, well, we know all about this. We know everything. Like, we're burning out. What are we doing about it? Like, how are we actually fundamentally changing the systems that we work in to create an environment where people are not losing, you know, their physical health, their mental health? They're not like taking sabbaticals. They're not just flat out quitting. And you're losing talent because of that. You're losing engaged people because they can't keep up with these unrealistic demands.
Yeah. I mean, the answer to your question is, we're not changing.
That's the thing. Fundamentally, no.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of documentation and data and descriptions about burnout, so it's not a surprise.
Right.
But the question that I asked at the top of the show is now what? So what you shared with me before we started recording is that burnout the cause of burnout is not the same. It's the result is the same, but the cause at every organization can be different. Can you talk to me a little bit about what are the things that cause burnout, and then how do you understand that? Because we need, in order to solve the problem, we have to understand what's causing the problem, right?
Yeah, for sure, definitely. There are various reasons, right? What I'm seeing across my work of why burnout happens in an organization. But the top three reasons that seem pretty standard is that leadership expectations don't really outline the reality of the organization. So they're out there bringing in business, they're speaking with stakeholders, they're bringing, clients in, and they're just saying yes to everything. They're like, oh, it's good for the brand, it's good for the business, capitalism is
You have
great.
to, right?
You have,
Like that's
right? That,
like you, that's what you believe. Yeah.
right. That's in part of like when we look at big organizations I've been part of, there are dedicated sales teams, like thousands of people, like with quotas, and that's just what they have to do. And the impact of that comes downstream of with your engineering team, with your project management teams, with your finance teams, with your ops teams. And the message is like, well, we just have to do it all. And we can't do it all because it's just unrealistic. And there's 24 hours in a day and we're human and we're not robots just yet. And so like that leadership expectation is always missing, or there's a convoluted leadership expectation. Let's just say that. It doesn't ever outline with reality quite as much as it should. The second piece is that people are afraid to speak up. Like let's say you do have a great manager and a great leader, and they want you to take care of your personal boundaries and mental health and have a healthier work-life integration. But because of your own individualized way of thinking, whether that could be previous work trauma, whether that could be your identity, your racial identity, just like you haven't been in safe spaces enough to say, hey, I want to raise my hand to say that I can't do X, Y, and Z, and then assume it will not have a negative impact on your career, that's a lot of strength that people necessarily are not willing to put out there because of past experiences or how they've been conditioned to think. And I can say that as a queer South Asian first gen immigrant here in New York, I
Yeah.
have felt so much pressure to just be successful. And for me, success has changed. That definition has
Yeah.
changed.
Yeah. Yeah. You feel you should just be grateful. I feel like it's the parental, whether it's your parent or said it or not, right? It's like, God, you should just think like if I could have that opportunity, right? Like that's what you're expecting. And it is, it feels very to both of those points where it's just everything all the time, all at once. And even if it's like, I had a client once that was a software organization, and it was just like, okay, just buck up for the next quarter. We gotta like get in there. We gotta ship the next thing. And so it's not even like that theoretically you could scale your, customer base and the products, could stay the same, but it's still the pressure to perform, right? It's the volume of work. And then on top of it, if you have that, I don't even think, I think it's more intense, like you're saying, for marginalized communities for sure. But it's, I think we all feel it of just like, I don't like, I'm going to be seen as a complainer or someone who isn't tough enough to make it or something like that, right?
And it's a fear that I think is universal, that we will be seen incompetent or not worthy of that next big project, or we won't get that promotion that we've been
Yeah.
trying for ages, right? Because success for so many people, even for me, is about monetary value, position and power, right? That's how you define success for so many. And that affects people and how you look at yourself and how you look at the work systems. And then the last point of why burnout occurs is like the overall employee experience, right? If we're prioritizing the work more than the people, that's going to impact how you engage with the company and the organization itself. And what I mean by that is that, working on holiday weekends, clients always right, boundaries are crossed, people are speaking with each other with toxicity and disrespect rather than community and collaboration. That all impacts, how you show up at work. And sometimes people are just frustrated and they're like, you know what? It's easier to not say anything and just get my job done. And then,
It's going to cost me more energy in the short term. Like I'm already exhausted and I have to have this confrontation. which I don't want to do that.
Most days I don't either. So I get it.
Right.
There are a lot of days in finance where, I worked on the trading floors and it's already hectic, right? You have eight monitors in front of you, everyone's screaming on the phones and people are yelling across the floor. But then when someone is screaming at you in front of all this, somehow the world becomes silent. No one is paying attention to what they're doing and they're all listening to this berate, someone berating you. I'm like, oh, this can't be real life. I feel like I'm stuck in a TV show, back in the 70s. And this and the, and because that happens more often, people are just like, it's not worth it. It's not worth going against the grain.
That's right. That's right. So if and it's and I guess the question is, or what I'm intuiting here is how to assess which one is which, and just to kind of stop and probably, I don't know, is it easy to figure out what is causing this? I mean, okay, I'm gonna back up. Burnt, you described burnout. It happened to you three times, and it was sort of like you cited an acute moment where burnout like happened. But we are, how do we like we are burning out because you want to prevent that crisis from happening. And I almost feel like it is kind of it sneaks up on you. How like is that the way that this works, a way that you've experienced? And I'm just sort of calling up my own experiences, right? And it's how do you know that it's happening? Because I guess my original question was like, okay, burnout's happening, what's causing it? But then it's like, really, it's like, I don't even know, like, what should we be looking for before it gets to even halfway to a crisis, I think is maybe even the first question.
It's a great question. I think there is an element of awareness that people need to be cognizant about, of like, how do we self-evaluate so that we don't get to that crisis moment? And this, this information is through research and all my work that I've done with organizations. I'm not a psychologist, but I've partnered up with many to know that burnout sits on the spectrum of mental health, right? So when we think about burnout, it's usually things have been brewing for quite some time to get to that point where we just don't have the energy to go on further, right? Whether that's with work or whether it's life. And when I like, we're just paused, we're just like exhausted physically. But when we think about the symptoms that get there, it's like mood changes, just like anxiety about work, anxiety about talking to your manager, this conflict aversion that a lot of us deal with on a day-to-day basis, that we don't want to bring up something so we're going to avoid the conflict. But obviously with anything, avoiding conflict doesn't necessarily make it go away or make it better. It just kind of, seals the deal for temporary fix, and then we have to just still deal with the outcomes. It also can lead to like serious mental health issues like depression or, like maybe bipolar disease if you're on meds and you're working with a psychologist. Like there's so many different things that burnout can impact, and you have to be really aware of your self inventory and regulate yourself. Like, wait, is this normal for me? Right? And a great way I always realize is that no matter how much sleep I get, I'm always exhausted. So like I need 8 or 9 hours of sleep, normal as a normal person. But if I'm still feeling drained, it's the mental fatigue. It's because I can't turn my brain off. I can't stop thinking about work, even on holidays or weekends. I'm consistently just like under pressure to deliver and perform. Sometimes it's been work, sometimes it's in the self pressure that I put on myself, these expectations that I set that are so unrealistic. And then obviously it comes down, in a very, very cascading way. So one of those things that I always encourage people is like start monitoring how you feel during work hours. So you have to like kind of keep track like a journal. Like if you're feeling agitated towards some lunch times rather than evening times, there's something happening there. There's a triggering point. If your mood changes, if you find less joy in doing the things that you used to, maybe you always had, a regular meeting with friends or families or dinners or drinks, and now you just don't have any motivation to do that, that could be a sign. Or if you're physically not getting the outputs when you go to the gym and you're still like not feeling great and moving around exercising, that could also be a trigger, right? So there are a lot of things that people need to look out for. My advice is always that it's going to look different for everyone because everyone else is different and we all have different conditions that we need to worry about. But trust your gut. If you feel that this is not yourself, like you're acting out of pocket and your personality is changing, your physicality is changing, then it might be related to stress and ongoing stress that can be a chronic issue at work, right? And that's when I always advise that work with your doctors or, maybe seek therapy out. A lot of benefits are out there, right? But that's like probably another podcast episode for another.
That's a whole nother podcast. I do want to get to the what now, but there's one other piece of this, which is as a manager, which many of our listeners are, right? They're leaders. How can a leader of a team understand or assess? Right. So they can do their own self inventory, but how can we see, is there a way to kind of like scan and identify?
It's a great question, Josh. I believe, strongly believe that there's a prerequisite before all that happens. And with any manager, and you probably talk about this a lot too in your work, is that when you think about collective culture and what does that look like for any organization, it's built on the foundation of trust. And that starts at the point of interviewing a new candidate, right? People need to feel that you're a safe space to talk about certain things. And I'm not saying bringing out all the skeletons in your closet, but like safe to say, hey, I don't understand this. Can you further explain? Safe to say, I made a mistake. I apologize. I'm going to learn from this. What do you like? How can we work together to make sure that this doesn't happen again? Safe to say, if someone else is creating anxiety or conflict, that you have a manager's support to work things out without being alienated, say, oh, this is all your fault, or this is just how things are done, right? Like, those are what I mean by safe when it comes to work, because my focus is primarily on workplace matters. And when you build that trust in the beginning, then you have a little bit of a professional relationship embedded into, moving forward, embedded into, work moving forward. And as things change with that individual, a manager's responsibility is just be aware, right? So, for example, if I worked for your organization and you were my manager, and usually I'm very chatty, I'm just like this on a normal day-to-day basis. But if you see a pattern change in 2 weeks' time, right? And you're like, oh, well, Bavik is not going for his normal morning coffee, or during our Zoom meetings, he seems very down or not as chatty, or maybe my work is slipping, right? Like these little mistakes, that's a signal point for managers to pull them aside, like, hey, how are you doing? What can I do to support you at work? Not be inquisitive, like, is anything happening in your personal life? Are there health issues? You don't want to cross that line, right? Because there's a lot of legal and compliance issues that we're going to take up. But you can check in from a human perspective, see how that person's doing, and then look at the impact at work. Because maybe it could be that this person just needs a day off or two. Maybe the work in itself is too complicated. Maybe it's a capacity issue. Maybe something's happened in their personal lives that's, giving them a lot of stress and anxiety. It's not your job to ask what's happened, but it is your job to ask, how is this going to impact you at work? And what can I do to support you at work? And those are the conversations that don't happen often. A lot of people are like, oh, I did all that and, it doesn't work for me. I'm like, great, but like, let's talk about the population that doesn't even have that conversation at all. Right, the population that does have these conversations, when you think about what are the benefits the company can offer, maybe you need to think about like legal accommodations, or maybe the person just needs to really reevaluate the work and like the expectations that the job has, rather than always thinking about personal. But the folks that don't ever ask these questions, they're worried that they may cross the line. They're like, oh, this is too personal. I want to stay professional. And I find that really hard to believe, how you work in a post-pandemic world, knowing that we all have collectively gone through a series of traumas during that period, and for some continue to do so in this economic geopolitical environment. And we don't ask about how they're doing it from a human level. Like right now, news is 24/7. We're constantly embedded with news that are quite tragic. And if you know someone is part of that community, it is your duty of care to just check in to see what can you do to support them. I'm not saying be a therapist to them, but there should be, it can't be just work related all the time.
Practice. So I think I hear what I'm gonna take one step further, which is practice the check-in. Practice the check-in. And I'll connect it back to your first point about that trust, because if you don't have, as an individual with your leader, as a leader with an individual, that trust, there's even less likelihood that they're going to share anything and ask for. And then I'll go back even further in our conversation and say, well, as someone working real hard, it is perceived as weak if I'm like, right? So your response is probably going to be, I'm fine. So perhaps, and poke holes if you can improve this, and I'm not the expert, I'm just sort of interpreting what you're saying, is like, if you practice that and you get comfortable, it's like maybe, it's the ask the three whys or the five whys, right? You get to it, or it's like you continue, are you sure what's going on? Like, I need, and maybe that can break through. But also, there's only so much as a leader that you can do, because you want to demonstrate care and safety, to your point.
I was just gonna say trust and empathy go a long way, right? If you build trust and you're empathetic to people's situations, you may not be able to solve their personal issues, and it's not actually in your responsibility to do that. But when it comes to work in itself, there is a duty of care. Like, similar to, when we are all working in the office, and if there was some sort of emergency, like a fire broke out on a floor, or a stair elevator was broken, there was some emergency, what would you do? Would you just say, oh, I'm not gonna get involved? Or would you try to help? Would you call 911? Would you call, someone
Right.
who's
It's acute.
it's acute, right? And you're seeing signs. If you're building trust and you're going with the empathetic lens and just from that human side of things, and you're seeing differences in people's behaviors, talk about it, bring it up to a certain point, and also talk about your own vulnerabilities. That was my second point. Like, if you think about how many leaders are so stoic and don't speak about, what challenges them, what keeps them up at night, your teams are never going to be, feeling comfortable to do the same.
I think that is so important, and it's something that that I really believe and try to bring forward in my role. But it's like modeling is so powerful, because you can demonstrate the ability to be vulnerable, trust, you're going to trust them. And you're demonstrating, hey, listen, I'm going to go take some time off. I'm going to seek some help. And it's like, it's to me, that is such an incredible tool that leaders can employ to facilitate these relationships in order to get to the burnout and get and address that, because it unfortunately it's happening. It's gonna happen,
It's
right? It
happening.
would be better if it's not, but unfortunately it's gonna happen.
And it can be smaller things too, right? It could be I don't work past 6 p.m. every day. Or if I have a
Perfect.
personal appointment, I actually put that on my calendar and say, hey, I have to go do this. You're encouraged to do the same. If I come in early, I have flex time to leave early, right? If a weekend request comes and it's not urgent, I will have your back and I'll speak to the client or the external team member and saying, we're not doing this. We'll get back to you on Monday. And if we do have to do it, then we take a time. Like, it's all these like normal things. Like, if you treat people with respect and you treat people with like professionals and grown-ups that you've hired them to do the job, then they will treat you with the same level of trust and empathy that you deserve as well. And we don't have to lead to burnout, right? That's easier said than done, because there is a lot of fast-paced moving parts, right? For a lot of organizations, think about finance, law, fashion, marketing, everything's like you're already late because it's yesterday. And it's really focusing on those small, tangible changes, and a lot of it is just changing behaviors, which is the hardest part. You're asking people to change the way they think about work in a market where like we've worked in a certain fashion for so long, right?
So let's then push this forward. What else is on your toolkit for now? What? We've talked about the individual, we've talked about leaders, teams. I'm thinking that now we're going to talk about kind of the organization itself.
I would say if you have identified burnout as one of your issues, right? Whether that's through just conversations that you're having with your team, whether you did a company-wide employment survey and you're saying that, people are feeling over capacity and they don't feel like they have the time, resources to get everything done. However you found out, if it's a priority to fit, then you have to keep your word, right? Like, don't ask everyone all this important details and get all this data and then sit on it, right? One of the main things you can do is ask them what they would like to see change in their areas. And what I always do is, like, regardless of the team is of 6 or 6,000, I get information from the masses. Like, what would you like to see that would solve for your burnout? Some of it is just, I don't trust my manager, so we need to bring out trust building exercises. There's too much work, so we have to think about an operations flow and a governance flow. I'm like, can we reduce the capacity flow, or do we need to upskill other people to be more competent in a specific task? So you have more people doing the same task, right? More people at a specific deliverable, then people's individual responsibilities goes less. Or do we need to hire more people? Like, where do you find the budget? If you can have budgets for fancy client dinners and, like, drinks and, expenses for executive teams, you can find the budget to hire maybe one or two additional people to alleviate some of the concerns. And my approach is always asking what would they benefit the most. But I also have, like, a foundational level of things. Like, trust is always an issue. No matter where we go, I always see that disconnect between leaders and employees because there's a natural power dynamic. Like, no matter how cool you are with your CEO or with your COO, or, like, they run the business and you are, part of that organization, but there's always going to be a power dynamic. And when you think about, Black and brown, queer people, marginalized communities, it's like that pressure is so much on because there's so much systemic,
Times ten times
background and
ten.
history and context behind it. So that trust is always going to be part of my toolkit. It's going to look very different and there's going to be a variation of it. But then also those pragmatic changes of, like, can we cut down on meetings? Can we think about, like, how do we empower our people to be a little bit more competent, upskilling them, training them, maybe sending folks on professional development journeys, right? It doesn't always have to be a seminar here or online training. If you want someone to really be an effective leader in your organization and you're seeing gaps, then find an external program. What does that mean to you? Like, help coach your people. What managers don't do is they don't do enough of the coaching and mentoring. They just manage. They're like, day to day, here are the tasks. Here's what I need to do. Here's what I need to get back to my seniors. But where's the coaching? Where's the mentoring? Right? Like, what I always have taken seriously when I've led teams is that there's a responsibility to your team, not only to help them with their work, but help them become the professionals that you are, become like who you are. I had a lot of great mentors growing up, and then I had a lot of not so great mentors, right? Like, there's always a distinction. But I think if you're going to be a leader, think about your legacy. Like, is this what you want your legacy to be? That people just fear you and they're just pumping out results? Or you want to help mitigate burnout and be on the right side of history? That's what I always come back to.
I love all of this, and I love that, you can prompt people, say, here are some of the opportunities, and here's what you and asking them, and then making sure you're doing something. And I s struggle with the reality that the someone is going to decide that it's time now. So what you maybe accidentally devised or cited was the fire. And we started this conversation by saying, how do we not get to the crisis point? But in my experience, organizations and the people who influence them, the leaders, don't act until it's a crisis. And unfortunately for an organization, it can't just be one person, because then it's just like, okay, well, we're going to give them some time off. It's a whole system. And to me, that is the biggest challenge. You're really talking about, and this is something that I know well, a change in the system. And that is a big ask, not because it's not the right thing to do, but just because we got shit to do. And it's not like, how do you inspire change? How does one inspire? Not that you're going to have like the perfect answer, but this is the question I want to just sort of put out in the universe. How do you inspire systemic change before the crisis? Before a crisis?
A great question. It's about how you view, and this is directly to the leaders of the organization, how you view your community, your teams of people. Like, do you see them as executioners, or do you see them as valuable assets to your company and to your organization? Because if you care about them, then all of this becomes a little bit more easier. It's more about like, great, we're not bought in. So we're bought into the why. It's more about the how. But if you're just there counting the sales that you're making, building those relationships to benefit you and peers of yourselves, then nothing will change, right? And it's a very harsh reality that if you think of your people as assets and you think of your people as,
Think of your
collaborators,
humans as resources.
then exactly, then yeah, this it's supposed to be a little difficult, a little bit sticky, but you'll get there if you really care about it. But if you're really just thinking about them as numbers, then don't bother, right? And I think I've been really clear about I don't work with people like that anymore. I'm not working with organizations or partners or leaders that are doing it for the wrong reasons.
That is really well articulated. And it's clarifying, because we are in a moment of, I think our society, but also sort of capitalism, where there is so much intense pressure on short-termism that investing, seeing the people, and understanding that your role is to help people do better as humans is becoming less and less popular. But I think we've all seen, or maybe if we're lucky enough to have experienced, a mentor or a manager who had that experience, who had that, like, you could really see how it makes a difference. And you could make that argument for the bottom line and engagement, but it's really about humanity and making sure that the community that you've created, this business, this organization of people, right? People that are to group together in an organized way are able to do their best work for, the greatest amount of time.
I agree. And it comes back to how you want to be remembered as a leader. I always think about that. I'm in
I love
spaces
this question.
I'm always remembered. Sorry, I always I'm in spaces where sometimes the engagement is 8 weeks, sometimes it's longer term, and you don't have that much time with people, especially with people who I'm trying to serve, right? Leaders, you always get that interaction with. But the solutions that I create, I don't really get a lot of time, face time with them. And I always think like I need to present myself in a way where they know I'm coming from an authentic and true place. It may not be perfect. I never strive for perfection. I really just strive for like, how can we make this a little bit better for you? What can we do to collectively agree on as leaders, external consultant, or both internally, whatever the dynamic is, to make you a little bit more engaged, for you to feel valued at work, because that's what people are looking for. They're looking for dignity at work. And if they don't have the environment to do that, they don't have the trust factor with organizations or their leaders, they're just gonna feel unappreciated. And
Unseen.
what kind of system are you creating? But I'm an empathetic highly emotional, intelligent person. So I think about this. I know everyone doesn't think about that because people are still under the assumption like it's work. You come here to work, you get paid to do the work, and that's it.
I feel like we have reached a both real, realistic kind of clear-eyed view of where we are, but also hopeful. A lot of what you've said today reconnects me with why I do the work that I do, and I really appreciate your insightful question around how do you want to be remembered as a leader? And that is really powerful way of kind of shaking folks, because while we kind of went through burnout as an individual, burnout as a team, burn, how to what to do as an organization, where you're ending in this place of, hey, you as an individual, how do we get you to reflect and understand how you're seen in the world? And that I think is a great core question to assess and maybe even change some minds if we're lucky enough.
And if people just started having more parallel reflections to their personal lives, then this would be a little bit less tricky. Because if someone told you that you're a horrible friend, or you're a horrible partner, or you're a horrible parent, most people are like, oh wow, like I really need to like think about this. Like I need to do some self-reflection. If my kids called me an awful parent, or if like my friend said like you're just terrible and trash, like maybe I need to do some self-reflection. But for some reason, even when people know that their behaviors are not conducive to a healthy work environment, it is like, well, this is, I think it's a combination of consistency and old patterns, and also power and play. Like power dynamics always come into place in this. But just think about that. If someone's constantly calling you a shitty person at work, maybe reevaluate who you are and what type of person you want to be. Because all that comes down to how you lead, how you trust people, how you give people opportunities, you know?
Man, I feel like now we have to recommend, I have to go back and read the four agreements or something. All right. Well, let's leave it there. Bhavik R. Shah, Director of People and Culture at Rewild, culture change strategist and keynote speaker. You can learn more about him at his website. BhavikRShah.com. I'll spell it out. BHAVIKR, the letter, SHAH.com. This was both grounding and insightful and wonderful to have spoken with you. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
on
you.
Great Mondays Radio.
This was amazing. Thank you for having me and having me speak about such an important topic. I could talk about it for days, as you can see.
We'll stop at 40 minutes.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Josh.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.